So, Michaela, as we sit here in your home studio to record today's podcast episode, I'm looking at this four-legged furry creature at your feet here, Ella. We haven't had an update for a while. What's the damage bill up to on the furniture and stuff?
Well, we've had a de-sexed and had some trainers and psychological people deal with her. And she's been good. She hasn't chewed much lately, just Duncan's work socks for some reason.
Yeah, right.
Because he'd love that. But the funny thing is she has to be in our studio because she barks too much if she's not in with me.
I can see why. She's getting lots of attention from you. And she's giving me this look like, I know you. You're the guy that said I should go back to the pound.
That's right, Ella.
I think that's why she barks at me when I turn up here.
Yes, I even gave her a bone and everything to lock in the bathroom while we recorded, but that still didn't work. She wanted to tear down the door. So she's won, and she's now sitting next to me here in the studio, because that's what she does all day. She's all day here with me. So, yes.
Don't look at me like that.
Yes, those puppy dog eyes. He wanted to kill you.
I did not. I just suggested that you should find a new home for her.
Welcome to the Tradies Business Show, helping you get off the tools and into true business ownership, so you can spend more time doing the things that matter most. Now, here are your hosts, Warwick Bidwell and Michaela Clark.
So, as Ellis continues to stare at me,
go on the podcast. Oh, she licked.
She licked the microphone. That's even better. So guest cameo appearance by Ella the dog. But, yeah, look, today's episode's been a long time coming. We've had a couple of failed attempts at getting Jorgen on the show. He's a busy, busy man. So our guest today is Jorgen Gullestrup. I definitely didn't say that very well, and you'll actually hear Jorgen
pronounce
his name properly.
Points for trying. Points for trying.
But Jorgen is heads up an organisation called Mates in Construction, which is a charity. But rather than just raise money for a cause, what they do is actually work with people in construction trades around the issue of suicide and mental health. So unfortunately, it's a very big issue, not just in Australia, but obviously an Australian organisation based up here in Queensland. Big problem. Mates in Construction are doing a heck of a lot of work around this, and they've got some great results with the programs that they've rolled out. And I think it's an issue that not just suicide, but mental health in general has so much stigma around it, and people seem reluctant to have conversations about it. So we thought it was important that we had a conversation about this on the Tradies Business Show. You know, our podcast goes out to thousands of tradies all around the country. So I think, you know, everybody needs to listen to this, whether you're a tradie or a tradie wife, or just working for another trade business. I think it's important that all of us get upskilled in actually supporting our fellow man and woman.
Yeah, and I found this interview really interesting to help me get insight into how my husband works and what he needs when he's down. And, you know, I've realised that the things I was trying to do was exactly what I shouldn't have been doing. So I think there's some great advice in here, as well as how to get some more help.
Absolutely. So joining us today on the Tradies Business Show is Jorgen, and I'm not even going to try and pronounce your last name, Jorgen, from Mates in Construction. Welcome to the Tradies Business Show, mate.
Thank you.
So
what is that last name?
It's Gullestrup, Jorgen Gullestrup.
I'm glad I didn't try that one, mate. There wouldn't be too many Australians that could get that one right.
John Smith will do.
John Smith. So, Jorgen, you're head of Mates in Construction, and for the listeners that don't know, well, who you are personally and also who Mates in Construction are and what they do, can you give us a bit of background and tell us a bit about yourself and about your organisation?
Yeah, of course. It's Jorgen Gullestrup, and some of your listeners might by now have worked out that I wasn't born in Australia. So I was born in Denmark, and I moved to Australia in 1988. And a big part of why I moved was that I was sort of trying to get a restart. I had a period of not so good mental health for a period of time before that. So I've been in Australia since 1988. I'm a plumber by trade, and worked on a number of different sites. And I suppose I did the things that that us migrants do very well is I sort of saw the things that could be different and could be just like the place I decided to leave. And so I was sort of quite critical of things, and the natural progression for me was so to become a union official.
Of course.
And I was a union official with the Plumbers Union for about 13 years. And but through that period, we lost several of our members to suicide, and each time it happened, I sort of came to the realization that it was only really a matter of coincidence that I wasn't part of the statistic, and it just seemed so meaningless when you went and saw the family of somebody who died by suicide and tried to help them out with the various industry benefits that was available to them. It's it would just be much better if we could do something before the fact. Mm. So not only me, but other people within the industry, a number of people in the industry started to say that we actually needed to look into to suicide and mental health within the construction industry long before anyone else was really doing it. And we had some research done back in about 2006 that looked at suicide rates. And it sort of showed what we all really knew anecdotally anyway was that suicide rates were very high in our industry, far higher than amongst other men in Queensland and in Australia, and particularly our young workers were at risk. So that's sort of the background to what we are doing and why I'm doing it. And at that time, I decided that it was probably time for me to have a midlife crisis. So I quit my job and was going to go backpacking through Europe and Asia. At that time, the report on suicide had been handed down, and there was some people in the industry saying, "Well, you know, it's sort of been one of the things you've been talking about. Maybe you should put your money where your mouth is, and come and help us put it together." So that's how I got involved in it.
Mm. So, Jorgen, you mentioned you had not so good mental health. I know it's a very personal thing to talk about, but could you expand on that a little for us, mate? I mean, what did that look like for you?
What did it look like for me? It looked like a period between when I was probably 16, 17 and 23. Where I can't actually remember much from that period because it's just a dark hole. But I just had a 6 years or something like that where it was like living behind a plate of glass, and you couldn't I couldn't engage with people around me, and I felt I was a burden to everyone, and I was a fraud, and all those kind of negative feelings that you can have, and that at times that people would probably be better off if it wasn't there. So I was on all sorts of medications, as they did and as they do, and some of it was very good and some of it wasn't very helpful. And at the end of it, I just came to the conclusion that if things was going to change, I probably had to be part of the solution as well. And that's when I decided to try to go to Australia with my wife at the time. To sort of try to reinvent myself as a well person rather than a sick person, because I've had all those years where every conversation started with how are you going, and with a bit of a, you know, that sort of, you know, I sort of become my illness rather than the illness was part of who I was. Mm. So that's sort of where it came from. So I certainly went through a period where, and I had a suicide attempt as well, and things like that. And one of the things that struck me today was when I did have my suicide attempt and I was admitted to the emergency department, the doctor there was very supportive of me. So he said, "I'm not going to admit you to a psych ward. I'm going to admit you to a general ward, so it's not on your record." Hmm. And that sort of made me think, do we have so much stigma around mental health that it's actually better to deny people the best possible professional treatment so they don't get exposed to the stigma around mental health?
Mm.
And so why do you think it is so hard, and particularly for, you mentioned that young workers are at most at risk, why do you feel that that is particularly those young ones?
I think it's probably hard for all of us because mental health and depression doesn't discriminate. You know, one in five of us are likely to experience a diagnosable mental health condition over a 12-month period, and more than half of us will experience it over a lifetime. But why it can become quite dangerous, particularly for young men, when they get depressed, is that we are very solution focused. We're problem solvers, and you go through all of those kind of things. And if you go through it yourself and you don't get any help with it, it's not that hard to be very one tracked about what the solutions are. Where sort of suicide can become one of those things that could be a solution. And maybe in our industry, when we look at the literature, the strongest mitigating factor, the strongest protective factor against suicide is what we call connectedness. So if we are connected to a purpose of some kind, and that might be a really good family, it might be sport, it might be a church, it might be all sorts of things where we're really strongly connected with a purpose, we're much less likely to die by suicide. So when we look at young men in our industry, we work an awful long hours. We are, often 6 days and sometimes even 7 days a week when the work is on. So if you want to connect the way that young people might want to connect, so maybe through sports or something like that, it's actually very difficult to do while you're working in this industry. And maybe then we substitute those connections with Friday night in the pub or with social media or things like that that might not be the most healthy ways to connect.
Yeah, it's and I have had my own experience with mental health issues as a young guy, about similar age to you, Jorgen, and had my own brush with suicide. But people have asked me since then, what stopped me?
Yes.
And for me, it was exactly that. You talk about that feeling of connectedness. I thought about, my family, my parents, and I thought about some of the people that were in my life and some of the activities that I wanted to experience, but I hadn't yet. And, those thoughts actually turned me away from that attempt. So I guess that time thing is hard, and that's a real cultural thing with the construction industry and a number of other industries, not just in Australia but around the world. How do you guys actually go about shifting that and changing that isolation that people feel?
One of the things that we thought about early in the days when we developed the program, and we looked around what people were saying about this topic and the questions at the time, and then this was back in 2007. And no matter where we looked, was people were quite hopeless when it came to preventing suicide in men, because men are genuinely not very good help seekers. So all the discussion was about how do we improve help seeking in men and what can we do to improve help seeking in men. And when we then looked at it, I said, well, actually, if we're not very good at it, then focusing and asking us to do it is really setting ourselves up for failure. Mm. We're actually playing into our weakness. So we then said, what is our strength? And one of the things that we talked about earlier was that men are very solution-focused, very problem-solving focused. And while we might not be very good at asking for help, it's actually a very deeply embedded part of our culture that we should always offer help, that you should stand up for your mate and you should help your mate out, and all those kind of things. So when it says, how are we actually going to change this culture? So we're not going to play to our weakness. We're actually going to play to our strengths. So we designed our program not around help seeking, but around help offering. So if we could actually get construction workers just like me to be prepared to go to somebody and say, mate, you don't look like things are all right. Well, you know, what's up? We actually thought we could change things. And the history with the program have shown that that is absolutely true. Men are great help offerers and really prepared to do it and do it extremely well. As do women, but it's in the context of a thing where we might not actually be good to ask for help for ourselves. We're certainly always good with offering advice and offering help to others, and that's really the strength we're playing to.
It's really interesting because my husband is a tradie, and there's been a number of times that he's really struggled, and I think he's really needed some help. And, you know, I've talked about saying, you should go talk to someone, why don't you? And, no, I'm right, I'll handle it myself. And I kept thinking, how can I get him to get some help without forcing it upon him, but him making the choice? And it's just so interesting that you say that I felt like, you know, if his mates had reached out to him one-on-one or, you know, actually started that conversation, that they could have really helped him come out. And 'cause he often says, I've got no one to talk to. So, you know, and he doesn't always want to talk to his wife about things, and I get that. So it's just so true that they do need those people to offer that help to them.
Well, there's so much of our identity sits in that, isn't it? That we are the fixers. I certainly know at home that I'm not a licensed electrician, but if the toaster's not working, my wife is coming with the toaster with me for fixing it, or if the door is sticking or anything like that. My role in the home is a fixer. My wife is doing most of the relationships around the family and around the friends and the social diary and all those kind of things. She does that much better than me. So it's about actually saying, well, let's just stick to within the area where we're good. The other thing we should note is that what we know from the literature is that people who die by suicide generally, we can never completely generalize, but people who die by suicide generally don't want to die. They actually desperately want to live. But often they come to a place where they think that that's the only solution they got left to them. And therefore it's so powerful when somebody else walks up next to you and say, mate, you're not right. Can I help you? Because we, you know, as long as it sort of feels safe for us to do, we will reach out in those circumstances and say, well, things are a bit tough and I don't really know what to do and whatever, so on. And we don't actually need a lot of hope to pick another option than suicide. We don't need a lot of encouragement. We just need a little bit at the right time. So that's why it can be so powerful, even just to ask the question, are you okay?
Yeah, and just back on, you know, that fixing, I know when my husband is particularly not in a great place that he will actually go, I need to go build something. And yes. So he will go out into the yard and he will build something or add something to his shed, or and that's his way of dealing with whatever's going on. So it's really interesting that's really helped me understand his behaviour more.
That's where we feel home. It's where we get our identity from. You know, I'm a plumber. That's me. Yeah.
So Jorgen, mates in construction, you know, this thing kicked off, what are we talking, like 15 years ago now, 10, 15 years?
Nah, 2008. So okay. So we've been around for 7 years.
Right. And
7 years and a bit.
And in that time, what's been the journey for the organization itself, and you know, I mean, can you give us a sense of, I suppose, how many people you work with and how you do that? How do you actually get out there and interrupt some of these trends and actually help construction workers?
We started in Queensland in 2008. The project started 2007, but Mates in Construction started in 2008, and we've expanded to New South Wales, South Australia, and Western Australia since then. Currently, we have just over 100,000 workers in the program nationally, and about 55,000 of them are in Queensland. And we have a network of about 9,000 volunteers. and their volunteer connectors. And how the mating construction program works is that we go to a site or workplace. It can be a large workplace, it can be a small workplace. But we go in and we have about an hour's conversation with everybody in that workplace, including the receptionist, including the manager and the tradies and the employee and the apprentices. And we have a 1 hour talk about suicide as a preventable problem we have in our industry. It's a very tangible thing we can actually do something about. It's all about mental health, but suicide is actually the problem we can solve. We then talk about what it looks like when one of your mates are struggling and how we might pick it up when somebody's not doing too well, and then what we can do about it. And at the end of that session, we then ask people to volunteer if they want to be part of mates and construction as a volunteer. And we normally get sort of 20 to 30% of people volunteering to become what we call connectors. And as a connector, as a mate who can keep you safe while connecting you to help. So when we do the general awareness training, everybody gets a white sticker and we put that in the hard hat that says we are in the mates and construction program. And when you're a connector, you get a green sticker. So when you, with a white sticker, see that one of your mates might be struggling a bit and you might ask if things are okay and his arms, things are sort of a bit average at the moment, all you really have to do is find a guy with a green sticker, because they would have the training about what to do next. And if we can get about 1 in 20 of people on site trained as connectors, then there's a fair chance that you will find one when you need it. The connectors, we give them 4 hours worth of training, and we a little bit about how do we have conversations around mental health, how do we ask about suicide, how do we connect somebody up to help when they're struggling, motivate them to get help. And then finally, we have people who we call assist workers. So that's people who participate in a two-day workshop, who can intervene when somebody is suicidal and make sure that they're safe until they can get the professional help that might help, that might assist them. So we can compare to physical first aid. If I cut my finger, the first aid officer will look at it and say, do you need stitches or not? No, I'll put a bit of a bandage on it and things are good. If I have a heart attack on the site, the builder's labourer would come and give me CPR, and I'll trust him do that. But I'll prefer if he didn't do the open heart surgery. I'd probably prefer that a qualified person did that. But if he didn't give me that CPR, I wouldn't make it.
Mm.
And suicide intervention and suicide first aid is very much the same thing. If we don't intervene at the right time, we might actually not get a chance to give people the help they need, because suicidal thoughts can be deadly. We then support that network. Once we've done that on site, that program belongs to them. They can do with that what they want to. They can say, we tick the boxes, everything is good. But most sites actually get quite enthusiastic about saying, well, mental health is actually something that is quite important to us, and they do amazing and fantastic things around awareness and barbecues and different things to start changing the culture on our site. We have field officers that will go out on those sites and support the companies and the workers who joined the program, and we have case managers, so that when somebody might be suicidal, a connector picks it up, and an assist worker might have a talk to them, make sure that they are safe. But of course, they didn't get there for no reason. So we have a case manager say, "What got you to that place, and how can we actually take all those rocks off your back sort of one by one and just sort, you know, break the issues up in manageable chunks we can deal with and connect people up to the help they need." And then we also operate a 24/7 helpline, and where anyone who are struggling with any connection to the construction industry can call 24/7 and get help here now.
Mm.
And if anyone want the number for that, that's 1-300-642-111. So 1-300-642-111. If anyone want any advice and help immediately.
And that's something I was going to say, Jorgen, is, you know, I guess from the perspective of your organisation, you're working with some of those sites where, you know, there's a number of tradespeople in one place, which makes it easier for you guys to get in front of the most people. But I suppose a lot of our listeners are, you know, self-employed, probably working on their own, working crazy long hours as business owners in the trades, and quite often they're not going to be on sites like that to be exposed to mates in construction. And obviously there's that helpline that you guys have set up that they could access. But are there some tips that you have, or you know, some words of advice for somebody listening if they might be going through a tough time, or they've been through a tough time, and they sort of, you know, they still have that aspect of isolation? I mean, what can they do for themselves to perhaps prevent getting that far down the track with their mental health?
Well, the earlier we deal with issues, the more likely we are to resolve them. Unfortunately, that's easier said than done for us as men. We tend to not do that. But of course, if we deal with something while it's a minor issue, it becomes a lot easier to deal with. I want to say something specifically about the thoughts of suicide. Thoughts of suicide are actually quite common. When people have been surveyed and asked, can you remember having thought about suicide over the last 12 months, roughly 1 in 20 will be able to recall having had a thought of suicide. So that's actually quite common. It's less rare, it's less common that people act on their thoughts of suicide, and it is even less common that people die from suicide, luckily. But it's really important to think of that thought. The best analogy to that thought of suicide is like an oil lamp in your car. You wish it doesn't go off, but if it goes off, it's actually a good thing because it gives you some choices. Mm-hmm. You can actually stop the car, and you can get a service, you can top up the oil, you can do all those kind of things. You actually got some choices to deal with it. Mm. Because if you don't, you know that sooner or later the engine is gonna blow up. And thoughts of suicide are actually very similar to that. It doesn't say that you're gonna act on it or anything like that, but it is a very clear sign that you need to have a look at your life and you need to do something about it. But I think in the context of what we're talking about here, it's probably even more important than that for the rest of us to be aware of what it might look like when somebody's not doing too well. Because if we as men are not very good at seeking help, and really when you think about it, is that, you know, there's all those kind of stigma attached to help seeking, about being weak and being not being able to manage your life and all those kind of things. So if you're really struggling and really feeling down, actually asking for help can be quite difficult, even harder than for the rest of us.
Yeah.
So it's really powerful. It's probably, you know, when it comes to taking that sort of risk, it's probably better for the rest of us, which are doing quite well, to take that risk and asking, are you okay? So the things that we really need to keep an eye out for is if somebody we know have had some sort of loss, a loss that is significant to them, and that could be a very wide range of a loss. For some people, losing a pet, other people can lose a family member and deal quite well with it, but for some even losing a pet or losing a business or losing a job or losing face or any of those kind of things, when that happens, it's probably a good idea just to keep a bit of an eye on people. If we know that about somebody, just keep a bit of an eye on behavior, and if we start seeing changes in behavior, either negatively or positively, like somebody could be aggressive or start drinking or drugging more, or you know, being a bit more careless, and it's probably just worthwhile just keep an eye on to see is things all right. And but it could also be positive that suddenly somebody is putting their affairs in order and everything like that. So when we see that, we just keep a note, and if we get that gut feeling that not all is right, it's really important that we actually take the chance. And we ask the question, are you okay? Because for us, the worst thing that could happen is a bit of embarrassment and maybe an awkward laugh. Say, no, everything's all right. I was just a bit tired. I got to bed late last night. So the worst thing that could happen is a bit of awkwardness and a bit of silence. But if we don't ask, the worst that could happen is somebody could die. Mm. And if I have to weigh up the risk of embarrassment against the risk of losing a mate, I would actually prefer the embarrassment.
I feel like part of the problem, and you've sort of spoken to this already, Jorgen, is that many of us just don't know what to do or say. Like if I ask a mate, hey, are you okay? And he says, no, I'm not. Then I'm thinking, holy crap, what do I do now? How do I talk to him, you know? So, and I think we have a lot of wives and spouses, female partners of tradies that listen to the show as well. I suspect that they're listening to this episode thinking, yeah, that's all well and good, but what do I say? Like, what if my husband starts, like, he cries or he says, no, I'm not okay and I can't handle it anymore? I mean, that's what you're talking about, is we need to equip the support people. Again, are there some simple things they could do it's a difficult area and it obviously requires some good training and education, but are there some simple things that support people can do once they've asked that question, you know, if they take that risk?
Yes, absolutely. And I think it's you're totally right. And part of that problem is that also that when we are really uncomfortable about asking, it's very hard not to let that on.
Mm.
And if somebody already feels that they're a burden to everybody else and disconnected and feeling down, then they wouldn't really want to burden you extra by saying yes. So the risk is that if that becomes too obvious that we are really uncomfortable and it's really inconvenient for me if you say yes, then chances are that people might out of pure consideration for us lie to us. Mm. So that's an important thing. So therefore, it's really important that we know what to do. And this is why we have connectors in the workplace, because if I'm a wide sticker guy and I ask, I actually know that it's no harder than saying, oh, gee, we better go and get some extra help here. You know, this is a little bit above us. We better get some extra help. And we get a connector in. And they would then be equipped to do the next. So one of the tips is let's ask in a way that we actually making it clear that that we are prepared for a good for an honest answer. So when we ask the question, we ask it in a way that makes it as easy as possible for people to say yes. So if I say to you, well, you're not thinking about suicide, are you? I'm almost saying to you, I would actually prefer if you said no.
Yeah, please say no.
Or you're not thinking about doing something stupid and I'm not going to admit to doing something stupid, all those kind of things. So it's just a little bit about thinking that in the way we ask, we actually flag our own, uncomfortableness in asking the question.
Mm.
The next thing is that when somebody tells us that they're struggling, what people often really need is actually to tell their story as opposed to hearing your solution. And that's probably the hardest thing for us to men because that's what we do. You give me a problem, I'll give you a solution. Mm. That's how we work. So when people start telling us their problems, we would often almost instantly go into fixing mode and say, well, you know, you should have left a long time ago and all that sort of stuff. It's not that bad, blah, blah, blah. Well, that's not particularly helpful at that time.
And often can make it somewhat worse, because then they just feel more acutely aware of their failings.
Exactly. So much more, let's just talk about this. This sounds like you're really doing it tough. I haven't been there myself, but I can certainly feel that you're not too happy about it.
Mm.
And at some stage, it might just be a good idea to agree that we probably should get some help here. See, for people who suicide, we often think there's only two options. We often think that the option is either to live with the pain we're in or to die. And actually, there's a third option that sometimes we can see when we start talking about it. And the third option is just not to do anything now.
Mm.
Just wait and see. Because sometimes things works out. And, tomorrow's a different day and all those kind of things. So sometimes even just say, well, maybe we should just give it a breather for a day or two, or go and see your doctor, your GP, or call up the mating construction hotline and let's talk to someone. that's really useful.
Mm. Yeah, it's really just about taking a pause, isn't it? Taking time to reflect and not having to rush any action, you know, whether it's the fixing solutions or whether it's the, you know, the more drastic decision to go through with it. Okay. So.
And it's really important to understand that suicide is not an illness. Suicide is not a condition of an illness. Suicide is a behavior. It's a choice. It's something we do. And given that it's a choice, obviously there's a link between people who have mental illness that might more often choose to suicide than people who don't have mental illness and so on. But given it's a choice, we can always give people options. And we can all have a role. It's not all doctors and secret squirrel stuff with psychologists and people. It's actually very powerful for just us as ordinary people to care and take the time to listen.
Yeah, it's ironic in the age of social media that you know, we have more people feeling more disconnected than ever before, and yet we have all of this amazing technology which is supposed to keep us all, you know, in touch with everybody. So I think, you know, some of the old ways of reaching out and grabbing a cup of coffee or a you know, a fizzy water or something with your mates, or, you know, making time to sit down with your spouse or whatever it might be, and actually having some of that physical social contact, I think, is very powerful as far as therapy goes.
Yeah, I don't know about you, Warwick, but when I was at the space where suicide was an option for me, I certainly felt that it was much more complex than I could put in 160 characters.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. I mean, I couldn't even think of picking up the telephone and articulating it. So.
Put it down to 160 characters was just about impossible.
That's right. That's right. So, Jorgen, thanks very much, mate. Look, I know it's you know, we really appreciate you sharing your personal story. You know, I know for me, regardless of the fact that, you know, My serious brush with suicide was over 20 years ago now, it's still, you know, it's still a big thing to talk about that. So thank you for that. As far as our listeners either accessing Mates in Construction or supporting the organisation, what's the best way they can get in touch with or find out more about Mates in Construction?
If anything we've been talking about here have sort of stirred something up, the best thing to do is to call the 1-300-642-111 number without delay and talk to somebody about it.
Mm.
If you're in a workplace and say, well, actually, we wouldn't mind having a field officer coming out having a chat to us about mental health and suicide prevention and maybe even run some program there, if you're in Queensland, simply just call our office on 07-3833-1140, 07-3833-1140, or send us an email. And really, really important, we are a charity and we rely entirely on the generosity of our industry. We get a bit of money from the federal government, but we don't get any money from the state government, and we are relying on donations and support from the industry. So if you have any spare cash coming up to the end of the financial year, there's tax deductible donations to be made. They could also be made in the start of the financial year. We're quite open to that.
any time of the year is fine.
If you have a barbecue on site, a gold coin donation, or you know, want to start knitting and selling it, whatever you feel like doing, we're certainly happy to be the beneficiary of it.
Great stuff. And we'll put those numbers and a link to the website and everything in the show notes for this episode. Jorgen, one final question, mate, that we like to ask all of our guests, and I think today it's particularly important, is if you had, well, instead of 1,000 tradies, we normally ask if you had 1,000 tradies in the room, what's one piece of advice? I think we'll ask you, if you had every single tradie in Australia in a room, what's one piece of advice you would like to leave them with, mate?
That is that we can make a difference, that we are not bound to the suicide rate and the mental health rate we have. We don't want them, and we can change it. We don't have to rely on anyone else to do that. And in Queensland, we have changed it. Our suicide rates have come down, and if we do more of it, we'll get better results.
Great stuff, mate. Well, look, thanks again for coming on the show. And, yeah, we'll put the links in the show notes. And it's definitely something worth getting behind. And look, if you are, you know, listening to this and you're feeling not okay, it is okay to reach out, isn't it, Michaela?
It is. And the listeners know my husband never listens to the show, so maybe there's one episode I can get him to listen to. It'll be this one.
That's right. Thanks again, Jorgen.
Thank you.
So, again, hopefully you got some information out of that interview, and please go to our website or Mates in Construction website if you want to get some more information or need some help. And we will have the links on our website, which is tradiesbusinessshow.com, and you can subscribe to get all our episodes there.
Absolutely. Until next week, take care of yourselves, be kind, and, yeah, we'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Tradies Business Show with Warwick Bidwell and Michaela Clark. Want to get off the tools and into true business ownership? Find out how at tradiesbusinessshow.com.